My name is Alex Behunin, and I'll explain later. In episode 8, I sit down with Philip Clinton, a geography teacher from Ventura College. We talk about his love for geography, his teaching style, some of the best places to travel to, and much, much more. Enjoy. Okay, I'm here with Philip Clinton, aka Mr. C, who is a geography professor at Ventura College. Thanks for doing this.
You're welcome. Good to see you again, Alex.
It's good to see you too. Yeah. Good to see you. Before we even start, I wanted to publicly thank you for when I came back to college this last time, and I wanted to give it another shot. I was burned, and you ignited my education flame. Just your style of teaching and how you just got to know everybody, and I hope that students at least have a professor that's somewhat like you, because it really made me want to continue going.
Awesome. You know? That's good to hear. And thank you very much.
Yeah, it was amazing. How many countries have you been to?
Total 173.
And so then there's 195 countries, right?
Yeah, so officially there's 196 recognized by the UN. There's some unofficial ones, but and some countries I will never go to.
Like what?
North Korea would be an example. Afghanistan I probably won't get to. Iran, Iraq, maybe Iran, but there's some, you know, that are just politically unstable or that it's just too difficult to get to. So
do you plan on getting to all the countries except for the ones you just mentioned?
No, that was never my intention. It just sort of worked out that way. But every once in a while I'll see a country on the map that I haven't been to that then I look into it and I find out that, yeah, there is fascinating stuff there. So I put that on the radar and try to check it off. But I'm not, you know, my bucket list on that part is pretty complete. I've been to enough places.
That's awesome. Before we go back to that, when did the love of geography come into your life?
Pretty young, actually. So I like to say that, you know, people are born with silver spoons in their mouth. I was born pretty much with a map in my mouth. As a young kid, my father passed away pretty young, but my mom really took us traveling. We went camping a lot. Traveled the United States a whole bunch of times. Went to Europe when I was pretty young, and I enjoyed maps. And I would, you know, still to this day, if you hand me an atlas, I can pass a couple hours just by flipping pages and looking at maps and remembering stuff I've learned in the past and places I want to go or places that I've been. So yeah, really young, just this sense of exploration. Also, the bicycle. When I was a kid, that was my mode of escape, where I had six brothers and sisters and I was in the middle. And so there were often Saturdays where I was like, I'm done, I need a break. And I would just get on my bike and I just would ride. And I didn't have any place in mind that I would ride to, and it'd get dark and I'd turn around and miss dinner and get yelled at and sent to my room for being late. But yeah, it started very young.
And so did you know that that's what you want to do with your life going through school?
Sort of. In high school, I realized in 10th grade, I had a moment where I realized I wanted to be a teacher. At the time, it was mostly history, and sort of that subject really catapulted my interest and even helped me become a better student in high school by finding a passion like that. But then I got exposed to geography, actually at a community college. And like you said, for me, you know, I inspired you. I also had that professor, Mr. Polizzi. I remember the man to this day. And he inspired me and turned geography into something more than just a map. And then I had other professors in you know, university that just, again, inspired me and fed me. I was a sponge at that time. And as more information was fed to me, the more I fell in love with it.
So why did you want to do teaching? What was the...
I started teaching at a very young age. I was with the YMCA. I would do the summer camps as counselors, even young. I was like, I forget what we were called, junior counselors, I think. You know, I was maybe 2-3 years older than the rest of the kids going to the camp. And I would be a leader and do certain activities. And I always loved the reaction of somebody going, oh, that's cool. And then I started working, embarrassing almost, that I did living history, where I actually had to dress up in costume and educate 4th and 5th graders on an old sailing boat. And we would recreate the 1830s Mexican-American California history along the coastline here. And yeah, so that was really cool. And then I knew I loved geography, and they don't teach geography like I want to teach it in the high school. I knew I never wanted to get a PhD, so that left the community college as my place of employment.
Did you ever want to teach high school, or was it just college?
I mean, I could have taught high school. I would have considered that as an option, but the high schools predominantly don't have dedicated geography. So they incorporate it into other curriculum. So I would have been doing like a history with a geography section. And gotcha. I didn't want to do that. I love geography too much.
Where did you go to college?
I started off at Texas A&M, and then Cal State Fullerton, and then a couple semesters at Cypress College.
And where did you get your master's at?
Cal State Fullerton. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Nice. And so from there, where did you teach?
My first formal teaching job would have been as I was getting my master's. I was a substitute teacher in Anaheim and Garden Grove, and I did that 5 days a week and went to school at night. And so officially that's when I, you know, entered the classroom. And then for community college, I did a part-time couple years as a part-time instructor at Irvine Valley College in Irvine, California. Mm-hmm. Then I took some time off. And then my first full-time job was in Blythe, California at Palo Verde College.
I remember those stories in class.
Yeah, that was that horrible drive from Phoenix to Blythe every day for 9 years.
Oh, how long of a drive is that?
It was about 128 miles, and it took me about an hour and 45 minutes one way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. I don't ever want to drive that road again.
And from there, did you come to Ventura?
Yeah, so the miles were killing me, literally. I was starting to get damage to my nerves and my back just by sitting in the car that long. And so I started applying, and I got lucky enough to get to Ventura.
And how long have you lived in Ventura?
Since 2012, so what is that, 7 years? Yeah.
And you've been teaching here since?
7 years, years. Time flies. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any good stories about catching people cheating in your class?
You know, I've got a couple. I generally, you know, there's always those people that sneak a look at their neighbors, and I give them the stare down, and that does a pretty good job of stopping them. And if they don't, I'll pull them aside and say, hey, listen, keep your eyes on your own paper. But I did have two examples. One guy had because I give the study guides, as you remember, and he had minimized on a copier machine the study guide with all the his written answers and put it inside of his hat. And during the test, I noticed that, you know, every 30 seconds or 45 seconds, he was taking his hat off and looking on the inside of it and then putting it back on his head. So I walked up to him and I said, hey, you know, that's a nice hat. I forget what sports team it was. I'm like, oh, that's my favorite team. Can I see the hat for a second? He's like, no, it's all right. And he would not let me see that hat. I finally got him to admit that the answer sheet was in there. And of course, I had to fail him. But the other one was this blatant guy had a cell phone on his lap, and he was literally scrolling and typing in answers. And he didn't realize that the glow from the cell phone light was making his, you know, face and chest illuminate. And so I just walked up and I caught him. I gave him an F on the test, but I talked to him and I said, hey, listen, I'm going to give you a freebie here. You know, you're going to get the F on the test, but I drop every, you know, the lowest grade. This could be the one you drop. I want you to come back and finish this class. And he actually came back and finished it and got a B. Nice. So, even though I called him out on it and we had a one-on-one talk, he was at least man enough to say, all right, I screwed up. But he followed through and passed the class. So that was kind of a proud moment.
with your style of teaching, it's lecture heavy, but it's the way you communicate. And did you get that from other professors, or is it like
that? No, that's maybe I did a little bit. I don't know subconsciously whether I can. Oh yeah, you know that professor, and I'm going to teach just the way they do. I know, you know, the we teach often the way we were taught. That's a given. But I think I developed that almost on my own when I was teaching on the boat with those fourth and fifth graders, because I had to, because the way that I do is I ask the questions back to the students, and that's my way of gauging whether they've understood the material or not, versus just being up there and, you know, spoon feeding all the information and not knowing whether they're getting this. And so, you know, it's just my way of, one, making the class fun, engaging the students, making them feel like they're a participant instead of just an observer.
Yeah, I had taken geography 10 years ago, and I failed it twice, and because it can be a very dense, boring subject,
sure,
if not taught well. So going back, I had to come back and pass the class, and by the end of the class, I was like, should I start going into geography? Like, I had to question, like, this is very interesting, you know?
Right.
It's you know, because I just had no idea what the world and what goes into it, and the crazy thing about it. It's a fascinating thing.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why I fell out of love with history, because one instructor literally brought the textbook to class and just read it to us. And it's like, wow. I can read, sir. Thank you very much. You're actually insulting me and assuming I can't read. And of course, it's extremely boring.
And also, you engage your students, and you basically get to know every one of them, or you know their name. Where did that come from?
That was a little trick that I sort of combined from a couple different people into what I call Meet the Instructor. And if you remember, you had to come to my office and turn in a piece of paper with some answers to my questions, and then I got to meet you and to have, you know, whether it was a 5-minute or a 30-second dialogue with you, it was a little bit of a more one-on-one. I found out just enough to make the student feel, all right, I can come to his office and ask a question if I need to. And it gives me the chance to go, okay, man, you know, Alex, you're working 40 plus hours a week, you know, and it's the graveyard shift, and you're trying to take an 8:30 in the morning class. Are we really strategically aligned to succeed if you're going to be coming to class after work, dead tired, and that kind of stuff? So it was just allows me to gauge the students' abilities to be successful, and then just one, make it personable. It's been proven that if the student feels welcomed, there'll be a higher success rate.
Yeah, definitely. And I've taken after your class, and once the teacher knows my name and knows who I am, I feel more connected, and it's like I want to keep going.
Right.
You know, it's not just like a.
You're not just a number.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're somebody.
So, what are some of your favorite places you've traveled to?
I get that question asked so many times. As a matter of fact, I got it asked today because I said, I was talking, showing a picture of Ethiopia and the sort of volcanic landscape there, and I said that it's one of the most unique places I've ever been to in terms of just weirdness. And a student asked, well, what's the weirdest place you've ever been to? And I go, I don't have to think about that. But my two favorites kind of depends. It's a two-pronged answer, because one, if I want to just go and sit and eat and drink good food and just watch people and beautiful scenery, I'm going to pick Austria or Bavaria any day of the week. I love that area. But if I really want to escape the world and see some beautiful coastal beach tropical, I'm going to go to a place called the Seychelles Islands in the Indian Ocean. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for us, I guess maybe fortunately, because when I go there, there's nobody else there. They're hard to get to, so that keeps the people away. But
how come?
Because they're kind of out in the middle of nowhere on the east side of Africa. So to get from here to get to there, you have to go through Europe and then down from Europe. So you're looking at, you know, two 12-hour flights. So it takes, wow. you're going halfway around the world. Yeah, and then there's no major airport there, so you take these small planes, and then you got to get on a boat and go to some of the smaller islands. So, but they're fascinating. There, if you closed your eyes and pictured the most iconic tropical island with white sand, blue water, coconut trees growing crooked out of the sand, that's them.
Is there a reason why you love to travel?
To eat, drink, different things, but just to see it. I really get a high. It is a high. You know, this euphoric feeling of seeing places that I've never been. And sometimes even places that I've been, I come back and like, ah, this is so cool to see there. And I pinch myself going, wow, I'm able to go to places that some people will never get to go. And you know, maybe that's wrong, but I really enjoy that sense of going to a new place.
Do you think more people should travel?
Oh, absolutely. That's why I encourage it so highly in the classroom, because I think when you do travel, you gain a perspective of a global sense, and you gain perspective on a local sense. When you go to, say, like this past summer, I was in India. It's one thing to say that India is populated, but to walk around the city or, you know, try to get a space on a train ticket and be fighting millions of people elbow to elbow, you really get a sense of what 1.4 billion people are. And so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my first time out of the country was just a cruise to Mexico, and when we got off, we went horseback riding, and I went through, a neighborhood, and it was cardboard boxes for houses. It really, like, opened my eyes, like...
This is how a lot of people live in the world.
It's the first time, because I don't know, you see it on the news, or you read about it, or you watch a video on it, but to actually see it firsthand, I could touch the house, was right. Like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, it opens like you up. It opens you up, and, you know, I came home from India this past summer with a whole different perspective on woman, because of the social injustice, the status of women in India compared to that of the of men. Just, it's unfair. And, you know, I'm a man, obviously, and I have a wife, but I don't think she's anything less of a human being just because she's a female. And to see that and experience it, because, you know, you hear about the women's rights movements and, you know, both historical and current and even gender issues, it you feel it. You really do. It's alive. We can sometimes be distant from it if you don't go out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean, just like the Middle East problem and everything. It's like, if you're a woman, you can't leave. You're stuck.
Right.
You know.
It's, yeah. Saudi Arabia just allowed women to drive cars. Yeah.
It's 2019.
Like, right. Yeah.
Really?
You're, come on, guys. Yeah. So.
How long were you in India for?
A little over a month.
What did you do?
I started in the very south, the very, very tip. So, like, if I took one more step, I would have been in the Indian Ocean. And then I walked, or not walked, but I moved my way up the western side. And I tried to do as much local stuff as I possibly could. So I hired local guides. I find there's apps on the phone now that you can get, that you put out your call for a local guide and you get responses. I hired just little taxi drivers. They have the little tuk-tuks, which are the little motorized scooter type things. And they took me out to fishing villages, and I looked and learned how the fishermen operate. I went out on the boat with them one day. I learned how to make rope. I helped this elderly gentleman lift an enormous amount of rope on and spool it onto this spool, I guess, and how he weaved it and twisted it, and I helped him do it. And so it was more of a hands-on type of a thing. I taught a couple hours in a classroom in the slums.
Wow.
Yeah, that was an eye-opener. So I took a tour of the slums. Did you see the movie Slumdog Millionaire?
Yes.
So I went into that slum where he was from, Dharavi.
Oh, shit.
And yeah, and I spent a whole day in there. Actually, 2 days, yeah.
What are some of your favorite memories of traveling?
Ah, okay. So, you know, That is a tough question to answer because of all the places I've been to. But I remember my first flight. My mom took me on a weekend trip from Orange County to San Francisco. And so it was just, what, an hour, hour and 10 minutes, something like that. And that first airplane ride, that was the coolest thing. And I still love flying because of that. I that changed my life, I guess. And then when I was 8, my mom sent me down to Mexico City. And I lived with a family for the entire summer. And they took me to various, a whole bunch of places in Mexico City. And then the following summer, he came up and lived with us. And we took him to places here in the United States. So that was a really cool memory. First time to Europe, kind of the first timers. You know, whenever I've traveled and been to a place that I hadn't been to before, that's always kind of like, wow, you know, this is really cool stuff. Yeah.
So before we get out of here, I'm going to name some of the continents and just kind of tell me your thoughts, your favorite places you've been to. What about Africa?
Egypt, with the pyramids, those are kind of cool, except that's kind of a letdown in a way, because you think that they're out in the sort of this deserted area, but they're really kind of smack dab in Cairo, or at least on the outskirts right there. And so you feel like you're in the city, and yet the pyramids are like, you know, they shouldn't be in a city, but the city's kind of grown around them. So that was kind of a big, like, oh, this isn't really what I was expecting. And then it redeemed itself if you take the boat tour up the Nile, then you see this places along the Nile, the historic Egyptian sites, and that's cool. South Africa is awesome, and I don't mean the country South Africa, but the southern portion of Africa. That's a place I'd recommend. If you've never been to Africa and you want to see the true African experience, I would recommend countries like South Africa, Namibia, and Zimbabwe. You really get everything that you can imagine in Africa, from the coast to the deserts to the tropics or subtropics, and the big animals. Every animal you ever want to see is there as well. And it's far less touristy than Kenya and Tanzania.
And with the far less touristy, is it more dangerous?
Not so much dangerous as just harder to get around. A little more, you know, travel savvy knowledge is needed, but it's very doable.
And what about Asia?
I love Asia. I had to go, or I didn't have to, but I chose to do my thesis work on Vietnam. So I was in Vietnam right as the United States allowed tourism into Vietnam. And so I even beat Coca-Cola there, which was neat because I really saw Vietnam before it transformed into sort of a little mini China in terms of a place where transnationals were setting up factories, and like Nike, that's where a lot of the Nike shoes are made for the cheap labor and stuff like that, which has altered the landscape. And then, of course, tourism has been increased dramatically. And that, of course, I mean, when I went to places like Nha Trang, there wasn't a single hotel on the beach. And now I hear it's no different than if you went to like Waikiki Beach. It's just nothing but hotels right on the beach. So it in a way, that ruins it for me. But I realize that's the reality. I get it. So I was very fortunate in my life to get to a lot of places that have, especially in Asia, that haven't been touched by that. Some have, and some are. Some are currently doing it, but a lot of places, you can get off the beaten path pretty easy, especially in Asia.
If you were going to travel to Asia, where would you recommend to go?
Thailand. Thailand is probably the most tourist-friendly country in Asia. You can see a lot of different things. You got the tropical beaches, and then you go up into like Chiang Mai area, and you get into still tropical, but you can see the elephant sanctuaries, the Buddhist temples, all that kind of cultural stuff as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Europe.
Oh, I love Europe. Like I tell people, I go, I know Europe sometimes better than the back of my hand because I've been there so much. I love it. I love the cultures. I love the food. I love the beer. I always find myself drawn back to Europe. It's got that sense where if you could go back into time, if you ever play that game, like if you could go back into time, what part would you of time and where would you go? I always jump back to like medieval Europe. I would love, I'm fascinated by the medieval period of Europe.
Yes. Yeah. Be a king.
Yeah, I got my own castle up on top of a hill and look down on my subjects.
Yeah, that was the when I went to Europe this past year, just the old buildings, and it's just like a vibe, you know, right. Just a vibe walking around there and just seeing it all. It's a trip, just so different.
Yeah, the history. You know, they had the architecture, they had the buildings that stood the test of time. And so we get to see that. In other places, they weren't as fortunate because of the, you know, type of architecture. Maybe it was wooden or it didn't have such epic buildings like Europe does. It's a really a concentrated area of history.
It's like some of those buildings are older than some countries.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Where would you recommend traveling in Europe?
Basically, the grand tour. So you can do England, like London, do the big cities like London, Paris, take the train into Switzerland, do some of the Alps, go down into Italy and do the three big cities, Venice, Florence, and Rome, and then skirt back maybe through Germany and Austria and hit up Amsterdam. And you really would get a good flavor of the different types of Europe.
What's your favorite food in Europe?
German food, absolutely. There's something called Spätzle, which are these little noodles covered in gravy. And sometimes you can put cheese and like bacon in there. Oh, that makes you fat just looking at it. And then, of course, the beer.
Is the chocolate cake overrated, or is it
good? I think it's overrated. I think it's I'm much more of a cannoli guy, the Italian desserts and Sicilian desserts. Yeah.
I know that you love to go to Mexico on the beaches.
Yeah, every winter during break, we take the motorhome and the quads and go down and camp on the beach for the 2 weeks, right, to see a Cortez.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I might have a cerveza or two.
What are your favorite places in Mexico?
My wife and I just went to Mexico City this past spring break. So it was good to get back there and reconnect with those sites, and she had never been, so... I like Mexico City. There's also some other places like Guanajuato has a beautiful colonial historic center. And then San Miguel de Allende has a sort of almost like a, I don't want to say like a Caribbean flair, where they paint the buildings of bright different colors. And so it's more like a little local cultural thing. It's kind of got this like Caribbean vibe. That's awesome. Pretty cool, yeah. And, of course, the food is delicious.
That's awesome. What about Australia?
Not one of my favorite places to go. It's a little too much like the United States. So whenever I go there, I kind of feel like it's just a bunch of Americans walking around talking funny. And for the most part, it's a big desert for the most part. And, you know, that's cool to see, but people don't realize how big Australia is. It's about the size of the United States. And so getting around from one side to the next is kind of boring. Unless you fly. Still, it takes about 5 hours to get across by plane.
That's a trip. I just found out maybe like 5 years ago that Australia is the same size as the United States, because the maps have fooled me my whole life.
Right. Yeah. And so it's big. There's not a lot of people down there. The sheep outnumber the people. And again, there's some neat things to see, but most of them are in the cities, like Melbourne and Sydney. And I'm not really a big city kind of guy.
So when you travel, do you go to the cities, or do you like to go out into the country type of thing?
Mostly it's into the country with the small little towns. I really enjoy finding these little iconic jewels, I call them, and versus the big cities that have all the traffic and the noise. And yeah, they're typically the ones that have the main attractions. But I kind of like the small little ones that have the little outdoor cafes where I can sit down and just people watch and stare at the architecture.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Two last things. Bringing it back to the United States, what are some of your favorite states or places to go in the United States? Do you have any?
Well, California is awesome. Right. You know, we've got so much variety, so many things to do, too many people. Where else? You know, if I had to pick, I probably would pick Utah as my favorite, besides California, because of the natural, stunning beauty. I mean, we've got tons of national parks there. They got to be national parks for a reason, right?
Right.
You know, so that, I find myself a lot of summers in Utah.
Do you like New York?
Yeah. I love the city. You know, like I just mentioned, I'm not a big city guy, but something about walking around New York City, it just walking and just bumping into people, having a slice of pizza on the go, that kind of stuff is cool to me.
That was my one place. If I were to die, I just want to go there. And my girlfriend got us tickets to go there, and I went to New York City, and it was just it's everything I thought it would be.
That's amazing. Just, you know,
just so cool.
Yeah,
it's just that's different.
That's cool too when you do travel and your expectations are either met or exceeded.
Right.
Because you know, for me, I spend a lot of time planning and. And sometimes I've gone to places and been disappointed and then altered my plans and then find that particular trip definitely wasn't one of my favorites. Nothing about it sort of rose to the top because, one, my plans changed and I didn't have the backing, the research to do what I should have been doing, and I came home sort of disappointed.
Speaking of disappointments, is there a place you went to and was just super disappointed and were like, I'm definitely not going there again?
You know, that would have to be Greece. You know, people have this idea, especially college students, because, you know, the classic trip after you graduate is to backpack through Europe, you know, and most people end up in Greece and they party there. And so, you know, you have these, again, images in your mind that these isles, these Greek isles, you know, they're covered in olive trees and palm trees and they're whitewashed villages and they're actually just bumps in the Mediterranean that are almost desert. They're really dry. Yeah, they have the whitewashed villages. But then there's all these college students getting drunk every night at the bars and coming in at 4 o'clock in the morning. So Greece has never been a place I really care to ever go back to.
I did forget South America.
That is... You know, it's farther away than you think, which makes getting there hard. But you can get to like places like Peru, Colombia, really easy. And Peru's probably the top of the list. You got Machu Picchu there. Bolivia is another great one. There's a lake there that borders Peru, Lake Titicaca. And there's a so if you go to Machu Picchu, I recommend taking this very historic train down to Bolivia. And you can go to this group of people that live on islands made out of reeds that sort of like not necessarily float, but they just sort of stay there, and they live out on these islands and fish the lake. And it's this like group of people that are like so old school that you feel like you're stepping back in time. Huh. Yeah, that's South America is awesome.
Did you like Brazil?
Yeah, that's one place where you kind of have to watch your back a lot. Crime there is pretty bad. So you know, there, if like Rio and Sao Paulo, you got to be very, very careful.
And then have you been to Cuba?
Officially, no. Unofficially and off the record, you know, I'm joking, but you know, I've been. We illegally sailed into Cuba and spent some time there. But don't tell the State Department.
Did you enjoy your time?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was really cool because it was back in the 90s when, you know, Cuba was still sort of just this afterthought in the most American minds. Now there's a lot of actually American tourists going there. You have to have a special, I think you've got to be sponsored in some sort of way to go there. And so they're going. And of course the Canadians have always been able to go there. So you get this huge Canadian expatriate type of crowd there.
Do you think it'll ever open back up?
We're pretty close, I think.
I mean, because Cuba has a lot to offer tourist-wise.
Tourist-wise, even economically, there's a lot of good farming going on down there. And, of course, you know, they have a lot to benefit, I think, by open access to things that they may not have right now.
Right.
So...
And lastly, so I think me and my girlfriend's next place to go is we're going to go to an island, probably cruise to it. What are some islands that you would, some ones that are maybe off the beaten path or just some nice
You're going to cruise to on a cruise ship?
Yeah, everything, maybe Belize,
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. There's a lot of open water in between there. So you spend most of the time just on the boat. I would pick places like St. Vincent, the Grenadine Islands, St. Croix, the outer Antilles, which were colonized by the Dutch, the French, and the English. And so when you go there, you get this European flair on top of the Caribbean flair. So I'd recommend those. They're closer together. You spend more time on land and less time on the boat, which is, of course, ideal.
Right.
So pick those islands versus maybe Belize. That's my opinion. But Belize is awesome, too. If you want to do Belize, just do it by land. Fly to Guatemala and then drive into Belize and then see Belize and then drive back into Guatemala and go home.
Awesome. Well, thank you for doing this.
You're welcome, sir. My pleasure. Good to see you again, too.
Good to see you, too.
Thanks for listening to the episode. If you enjoyed it, give me a rating and a review on any of the podcast services. Or you could go to my website, alexbhunin.com. Until the next episode, I'll explain later.